This is Money Moves on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Happy Tuesday. This is Money Moves, VSiN, the sports betting network. Alongside Jonathan Von Tobel, I'm Stormy Bonantoni. We are holding it down for the next 2 hours, live as always in downtown Las Vegas, Circa Resort and Casino. Hopefully brighter times here than there were the dark times in Tallahassee yesterday. My goodness.
Yeah, it was cool. I mean, I guess I didn't understand
it. It was cool?
I mean, well, I always like when like just things go wrong, but I just didn't really understand. Every time they showed the field, it looked like it was adequately lit, at least for a football game.
So
but I guess there were other intricacies of lighting.
Like they were kind of detailing on the broadcast. It was coming back in stages. So, yes, they had it lit on the field, but you still need power to certain things. And, I mean, just the fact that for the whole first half, you don't have the play clock. You don't have the PA. Yeah. You don't have the headset communications. All of these things that people have become so accustomed to having over the last few years.
Football in a classic sense, I would say.
Taking us back to the dark ages.
That's right. I do think that
where were the leather helmets?
I do think it was funny that, you know, on the heels of the Western Michigan-Michigan final on Saturday, in which time was an issue, then there is an issue with the electronics of the clock, and they have to put on the broadcast. So how'd they phrase it? You know, time is being kept on the field. This is not the official clock.
Yes.
Absolute nonsense. So
Ben Stevens, who hosts on the weekends here, he tweeted out, I'll tell you one thing, there's not a chance I'm trusting this game clock tonight right away. That thing did numbers. We'll recap more of that game in a moment, but we do have a lot to set the table for that is to come. Plenty of college football, plenty of NFL. Let's run it all down.
It's time for the top headlines and topics of the day. This is The Rundown.
JVT, now that week one is in the books, we will fully push forward to week two in college football. Look at some pole position here. Top 25 teams in action this week. Some of the more notable moves, intriguing lines this week, and our first true breakdown of the big one, Texas-Ohio State.
Yeah, we get some good ranked-on-ranked action this weekend and some really interesting matchups that do involve ranked teams. I got to tell you, you're going to be on the sideline for the Georgia Tech contest against Tennessee, but the team you had last week is in a really interesting spot on the road against Kentucky, a team that might have some upside. So I'm really interested. There's a lot of these top 25 games, and we're obviously really intrigued by them because they're considered the best in the country. But there's some interesting slip-up spots, and I do think there is one ranked team that might be in a little bit of trouble. Ooh. Against an unranked opponent. And that ranked team is at home, so we'll talk about
okay.
that.
I do think it's interesting, though, that you bring up that Alabama-Kentucky matchup, because I've already seen some people on social media saying, could this be an upset watch for the Tide? I don't know if I'd go that far.
I don't believe
but
it.
But I'm in. Okay.
I think Keelan Russell is going to be freaking awesome. And I think this Alabama team, let the record show again. I was the only one that picked them to win the national championship here at the Vegas Stats and Information Network.
I do appreciate JVT taking the PSA that I have put out there. It's Keelan Russell, not Keelan Russell,
also,
ladies and gentlemen.
I went automatically with Keelan when I first saw the name. So I don't know why people would go Keelan, but whatever.
He's too nice to correct people, so I told him I would.
Much like
forward.
I am. Keelan Russell and I have two things in common.
Well, yeah. There you go. Also, how about this? Over under pressure, looking at the NFL week one game totals that are on the move. A few moves that I think make a lot of sense and some not so much.
Yeah, this is going to be part of, I think, a regular thing. Everybody does teaser Tuesdays. What about total Tuesdays?
Yeah.
So we'll take a look at the NFL card, where some of these are at. Some are floating around, some of these key numbers. So we'll talk about how we can tackle some of them. And we've had a couple that have moved quite a bit from the first open, 2 or 3 points. So we'll discuss maybe if there's time to buy back on some of these.
And it is crazy to think it's football eve. We are finally here on the precipice of the NFL season getting underway tomorrow out there in Seattle. The Patriots and Seahawks going head-to-head. We will, coming up in the next segment, break down some of the updates around that game, including the Christian Gonzalez contract that officially gets done. We had the conversation yesterday. Will that come through before game time? Ultimately, it does. A record-breaking deal there. We'll also have a couple great guests on the program to help us break it all down. VSiN's own Adam Burke. He's got a handful of plays in Major League Baseball today. Potentially some college football and NFL thoughts, and professional bettor Jason Jarvis with some of his favorite plays on the early week one NFL slate. But let's get back to what we saw last night when what was just, we already talked about the scene and the game being delayed for nearly 2 hours and all of the chaos around the power and communications. But how about the chaos that was that game in general last night as Florida State and SMU kicked off their ACC season? SMU does end up getting the win 27-24, depending on the number. I laid the 2.5 and was not a fun sweat, but that comes home if you laid the shorter number with SMU. A rough way to get a push if you're Florida State when you had every single opportunity in the world, it seemed like, to cover this game with all of the turnovers from SMU. So, in my opinion, as I was watching this game, I was screaming at the TV constantly because SMU at several points should have been up like 21. And instead, it was a down-to-the-wire game the entire way.
Yeah, I mean, if I just presented this box score to you, 23 first downs to 16, 585 yards to 324, 11.9 yards per pass attempt to 5.4. I mean, you can go down the list. Florida State did run the ball relatively well. It was a lone time they really didn't have a big edge. And then if you look at the rest of it, right, four turnovers and everything that happened for them, you can understand once you get there why this happened. But look, SMU, this is the story in a lot of these games. I mean, we talked about this a lot in Survivor last year when the Rams kept shooting themselves in the foot in a game in which they statistically dominated their opponents. That's how football works. If you're going to consistently give your other team a bite at the apple, then they're going to find flesh and get this done. And it looked like maybe Florida State was going to be able to get this done. And I wonder, man, I mean, do you want to freak out a lot? Because these are a lot of self-inflicted wounds. If you remove those turnovers, this was a dominant offensive performance for Kevin Jennings and the Mustangs. But I couldn't help but think, like, is this really the second best ACC team right now?
Which also doesn't give me a whole lot of faith in what the ACC is.
Yeah.
Especially the way that they got crushed and clobbered by all the other big conferences. They, whether it was Big Ten, SEC, Big 12, whatever it was, they were struggling. SMU loses the turnover battle 4-1. Kevin Jennings, despite the great offensive numbers that he had two interceptions as well. That one in the third quarter, though, in the end zone, was heartbreaking as the receiver runs the wrong route. Jalen Hale has a fumble. Yamir Knight muffs the punt. They also had a missed 38-yard field goal in the second quarter. And then that offsides, if you remember, on that Florida State field goal attempt, then ultimately turns into a Florida State touchdown late as well. You saw that stat on the screen from Opta AI Stats. SMU, the only FBS or NFL team the last 30 years to have three or worse turnover margin, twice as many penalties as their opponent, fewer rushing yards than their opponent, lower time of possession, more missed field goals, and still win the game. So the bigger takeaway for you, JVT, is it Florida State's inability to be able to win a game that was essentially gift-wrapped for them, or SMU winning despite all of the mistakes because they were all over the place?
Well, I think it's SMU because the theme coming out of week one, I think, is just the state of the ACC as a whole. Like every single one of these teams, as we have seen now, a week and a half, we'll call it, if we include week zero of football, I mean, the only two real competent teams that we have seen, and I'll include both on the field and off the field in the conference, have been Virginia and Miami. I mean, that's really about it at this point. And again, it's a very minute sample size. But SMU, I think I do worry a little bit. First off, the offense, again, looked great. We'll see what that looks like against better defensive competition, especially one where a player is not, you know, weaving the basketball between his legs before getting absolutely pancaked on a play in which they give up 30 yards. But I do think that when you look at SMU, you know, you have, I think at least, such a high bar to clear in terms of taking on Miami and maybe even Virginia to be able to win this conference. You can't make mistakes like this. And I do think you're a little worried. Look, Florida State did run for 199 yards. And when you looked at the way they ran for some of those, those were some explosive runs when you looked at the way they were handling things. Cromo was great, 116 yards, 5.3 yards per carry. Daniels on a couple of pulls on those read options were really good. And both Cromo had a 54-yard run. Daniels had a 34-yard run. You were giving up some explosives on the ground. So if you're going to get, if you're going to make, excuse me, a lot of mistakes, well, also maybe potentially having a shoddy run defense, we'll see if that actually holds up as you move forward. It's not a great recipe for success for SMU, who does have to beat Virginia, who can run the ball well, and the same with Miami.
I do want to say I thought Louisville looked good as well.
That's a fair point. Yeah.
Defensively, I don't know fully what they are because of what Trinidad Chambliss is capable of doing on the other side. So if you look at the top of the conference, Miami gets even longer as the short shot odds on favorite, -182 to win the ACC. SMU, despite the weird game, goes from +640 to +520. So their number did get shorter with the win. Louisville +750 is your third shot before Virginia 15-1.
They are 1-0 in the conference, right? So that does, I think that's why your odds get shorter. And theoretically, you've increased your chances of winning the ACC. And I'll say this, and you tell me if this is fair or not. I think in general, because I did see a lot of like, oh, Kevin Jennings putting the team on his back. You know, outside of the interceptions, there are a couple of throws. I mean, even the first touchdown, kid's got to turn like all the way around and readjust to the football. A couple of high throws, like especially on some bubble screens where a guy's got to go up and get it. On those quick screens, that's the difference between being tackled behind the line of scrimmage or putting it in his stride so he can go and get it done. I like, it's nitpicky a little bit. But when you have the aspirations that they do, I do feel like I can nitpick Jennings a bit and say some of those throws were a little off target as well, even the ones that he completed.
I think it's fair to be critical of Kevin Jennings because they have the Heisman campaign and all of this stuff. And like you said, the expectations for SMU. But can we take a moment to be critical of Ashton Daniels? Okay, he is everything I thought. He's not a good football player. And
what do you want?
Your offensive line is bad, and your quarterback is even worse. Like, what were they doing? I know you highlighted a couple nice moments with him pulling the ball and running, but it was the pass game, 12 of 23, 125 yards. It was not good, and he looked overwhelmed and consumed by their defense at several points. I did walk out of that, despite having to sweat out, again, a -2.5 that should not have been that sweat. I did walk out of that game still feeling pretty good about those season win total unders that we discussed on Florida State. Like, if this is the way that they're starting their season, they're not going to have that kind of luck week in and week out.
I mean, my overreaction to, what day is it, Tuesday? I mean, does $1.80 seem cheap on Miami to win this conference?
Maybe.
Because even at -180, when you're talking about playing that, when and if they get to the ACC championship game, I'm going to assume that they will be a much heavier favorite from a money line standpoint in that actual game against whoever they face.
Sure.
I mean, they seem, I know it's Stanford, but Stanford was never in that. They went out there and did what they were supposed to do. Yeah. And to,
I told you, I took the over in that game because I thought Stanford would contribute offensively.
Well, and to add
Miami
to the,
did it themselves.
To add to the point, though, as we discussed yesterday, I don't want to hear that it was just Stanford, because as we pointed out yesterday, there's a lot of teams that had a lot of lowly opponents that they did not put away. This, I mean, it was only a 2.5-3-point spread, but this might be considered one of them. But a lot of teams struggled against lesser competition. Miami did not.
SMU has lesser competition. UC Davis coming up next. Florida State has this week off. Then they are in Tuscaloosa taking on Alabama for week three. So the road does not get easier for the Seminoles. We got to step aside here on Money Moves when we come back. Diving into the NFL, lots of news and notes ahead of the official season opener coming up tomorrow night.
Money Moves here on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Oh man, what a time. The wait finally over. We've got a week and a half now, technically, of college football under our belts. The NFL season kicking off tomorrow. And if you want an edge this football season, you know you need to be a VSiN Pro subscriber. If you have a subscription, that'll get you instant access to our updated NFL betting guide with all of the post-preseason updates you need to know, week one betting systems, contest strategies, and fresh best bets from all of your favorite VSiN show hosts and experts. You'll also get that college football betting guide with previews of all 138 teams. And as a VSiN Pro subscriber, it's not just about the guides. You get daily best bets from everyone here at the network, real-time bet splits from DraftKings and Circa, AI-powered prop tools on the daily, and access to 24/7 video on the VSiN Watch app. You can get started for just $9.99 or save 50% with an annual subscription when you head over to vsin.com/subscribe. That's vsin.com/subscribe. Alongside Jonathan Von Tobel, Stormy Bonantoni with you. What's the laugh for?
So the AP poll just came out. And so the big headline is Michigan has dropped out of the top 25.
No.
Despite the fact that they won, and obviously I think they deserve that. But I was laughing because of a, I guess I would call him a friend, but a colleague out here that used to work for the local paper that now works in Washington. I was looking at his, Andy Yamashita, who covers Washington now. I was looking at his poll, or at his ballot. And he ranked Western Michigan 24th in the country, which, I mean, I understand the sentiment behind it, but a little interesting nonetheless. So I was just looking through some individuals to see who decided to do what with some of these names.
I will say, though, while we're on the college football topic, I mentioned the SMU conference odds. There were, and they shortened for anyone who missed our first segment. They're down to +540, second shot behind Miami in the ACC. But there were a few other conference numbers that shifted around, one of which being Western Michigan. Despite the loss, they leapfrogged Miami of Ohio in the MAC. UMass, following their big upset over Rutgers, went from 130-1 to 30-1 in the conference as well. Indiana leapfrogs Oregon as the second shot in the Big Ten. And then LSU's SEC title odds shortened from +850 to +650 after they dominated Clemson. Did see some comments in the last hour or so from Dabo Swinney as well, coming off of the loss, and if he might regret any of his roster construction. Had a really interesting answer that hopefully we can play for you a little bit later on in the show. Last college football thing, because JVT, you know I'm a reporter nerd, and you and I talk a lot about press conferences and how interesting they are, but we need to give our flowers to our girl Taylor McGregor yesterday. We can say friend of the show. She's been on our program a few times. She's a very good friend of mine, colleague at ESPN.
She wouldn't recognize me at all.
We were texting this morning about the chaos that she had last night, and like, just so proud of her and every report that she had. being able to go track down the white hat, talk to coaches, get live on air comments from coaches, player personnel. She was afforded the opportunity to sit in a lot of those meetings. And a lot of that just goes to, she's been doing this for a long time. She has a lot of relationships. She has a relationship with Commissioner Phillips to let her in the room for that kind of stuff. It was a really, really job well done. And in a tough situation where you don't know what's going on, to be getting those answers was very impressive.
Yes, it was very good. Very good job keeping us all abreast of everything that was happening.
Even though we just had to keep waiting and waiting. But a great job by them in a tough situation. Not so tough situation anymore going on for Christian Gonzalez out there as he signs a record deal with the New England Patriots. We were talking about this yesterday, about whether or not this ultimately would get done. It does. 4 years, $135 million, $102 in guaranteed money to become the highest paid cornerback in NFL history. And what makes this, I think, a little bit more funny is that he eclipses Devin Witherspoon, who signed his big deal a month ago, and specifically got $1 million more in guaranteed money as well.
Yeah, I think the NFL is doing okay.
Yeah,
I think every single deal at every position is going to be a new record setter as we move forward for a little bit now. Now we don't have to worry about, at least from an availability standpoint, whether or not he'll be out there. I think now that, and I don't know if that was actually going to happen, but that was one of the questions for them coming up on Wednesday, right? Yeah, I get my days confused, and obviously the extra day is killing me too. But it's a good sign for them, especially when you're talking about a offense that you don't really know too much about in terms of the personnel you do, but the play calling and how this is going to be schemed, really big deal. Obviously, an elite weapon on the other side in Jackson Smith and Jigba, so big deal for New England. I don't know if we saw this at 3.5 yesterday.
Mm-hmm. Come down to 3.
Is this in a juice 3? Is this because of the presence now of Christian Gonzalez?
I don't think so.
I mean, you never know. The market moves some weird things,
man. I think it's just we're getting closer to kickoff and people are kind of making their decisions. Excuse me.
I mean, it's a little odd that the hook, now again, it's not a big deal because it's a juice 3, but it is a little funny that the 3.5 minus 120 to the dog side now becomes 3 to the favorite side minus 120 after the news that Christian Gonzalez has signed his deal.
Do we have any update? Have you seen from Nicky Minwari as well? Unlikely to play was what I saw last, but still technically questionable. But something to keep an eye on as we get set for the game ultimately tomorrow. Or as you said, we're sitting 3 total. 44.5. Mm-hmm. You see anything?
Nope, nothing at all, at least in terms of Nicky Minwari. Now, he is, I believe, officially listed as limited for practice. That's generally a sign that you're probably going to give it a go. So we will see if that actually ends up happening. But okay. I know that Tyakota was a DNP as well. So that's the one that we're also tracking. But Minwari, at least a limited participant, that does tend to bode well for availability most of the time, we'll say.
We'll do a deep, deep dive on this game coming up tomorrow ahead of kickoff. And Jason Jarvis has a play in this game that we'll get to later on in hour two. Let's go to the second game of the week out there in Australia. And with the Rams and 49ers going head-to-head, all eyes this offseason have been on whether or not Aaron Donald ultimately was going to come back and join Myles Garrett on that defense. He does, but now there have been questions about whether or not he'll play in this game and make the trip. He was a little bit non-committal when asked about it yesterday.
Look, we're going day by day, come up with a game plan and see what's going on, but feeling good. Feeling really good.
Are you going to travel to Australia?
Feeling really good. Going to come up with a game plan and see. But honestly, man, I really do feel good. Like I said, things are clicking faster than what I thought it would be. You know, even with my first day out there with 11 on 11, I thought, you know, things would be a little all over the place, but settled in. A couple plays was a little rusty. It ain't too where I want to be, but it's pretty damn good, if you ask me.
I would be shocked personally if he did not travel and play in this game. And
play?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't think he's going to play.
You don't think he's going to play at all?
I mean, again, I
think snap count, but I think he would play.
I think they have more important things on their mind. I don't think they mind if he misses this game.
Okay. Well, I'll tell you, 49ers left tackle Trent Williams certainly thinks he's going to.
On the on the heels of them getting Myles Garrett, you know, it's just the old saying, when it rains, it pours, right? So. You know, luckily, we're not the only people got to deal with them, too. But I guess we'd be the guinea pigs of the NFL to kind of see how they are together for the first time. But
this spread, meanwhile, has stayed at 3.5, total 48.5. We did get a little bit of an update on some of the 49ers injuries as well. Nick Bosa confirmed he will play. Tight end George Kittle trending that direction, still not confirmed yet. And Mike Evans on the podium yesterday told reporters that the recent injuries were never significant and would not have cost him a game.
Yeah.
If that were to be the case, though, why is it that the coaching staff in San Francisco, and listen, this is my team, so it's not the most fun to be critical of them, but I feel like they've handled publicly these injuries extremely poorly.
Why isn't it fun to be critical of them? It's allowed.
Because I'm critical of my team all the time. I want to be a fan and not be a hater, but I feel like I'm a hater all the time.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, look, I think this is kind of NFL teams, too, in terms of, like, listen to what Donald just said, right? He wouldn't even answer whether or not he was traveling with the team, even though we kind of know, I think the expectation is that he's at least going to travel. So you try to be fire and brimstone, or excuse me, cloak and dagger. I'm using the wrong one. Try to be cloak and dagger with all this nonsense. But ultimately, sometimes it backfires, like with Christian McCaffrey when he tried to blame the media with the plan all along, right? So we'll see what happens with these guys. But I think for both teams, really, health is paramount. For the Rams, luckily, it's just for like two guys, really, Myles Garrett and, of course, Aaron Donald, specifically Donald. For your team, it's like every other guy on the roster. They have to make sure everybody's going to be healthy and accounted for. So we'll see. I got to tell you, I mean, on the lines of what we just talked about with Christian Gonzalez, I'm willing to bet that if you're right and that we see, hey, Aaron Donald's going to play, do we get like a bump up to four? And if we do, I'll take a piece of your boys out there in Melbourne.
I said I lean.
Melbourne, sorry.
I lean taking the points just in general.
Well, of course you do.
Let's stick with the NFC. Yesterday at the end of the show, we gave you the update.
Well, we're going to gloss over the fact that science is against your boys, that they took this, they took the trip the wrong way.
I don't know.
You're going to ignore science,
huh? We don't have time to play the clip, but there is. So
Ed Fang was on.
A science doctor?
Yeah, Ed Fang had.
I mean, a sleep doctor.
A science doctor? Yeah, that's generally how that works. Dr. Kathy Goldstein, University of Michigan, Ed Fang had him on, and he put out the clip. You can look at it at the Power Rank. But paraphrasing, Dr. Kathy Goldstein did not like the strategy of the San Francisco 49ers.
She liked the idea of the Rams being able to stick to the Los Angeles time zone in their brains. Versus what she said is crossing as many time zones as you are going on this trip. You need a certain number of days per time zone that it really takes 17 days to fully acclimate and feel normal. I'm not buying it.
Well, I thought you actually, as a science doctor, the way you put it, I thought she brought up a great point.
Sleep doctor.
I thought she brought up a great point about just the recovery after workouts, things like that. So I've always kind of leaned toward the Rams kind of doing it, I guess we'll call it the right way. Just go in, get it done and get out. But we'll see if that ultimately comes to fruition. And like we said yesterday, when one team loses, it's going to be like that. The reason is going to be why they travel or the way they traveled. And that's going to be it. So I'm ready to blame either one of them.
What I was just going to remind you of before we hit the break is that for the Cowboys, an important piece of their offensive line is going on injured reserve, needs surgery on his left thumb, left guard Tyler Smith. So he's going to miss at least four games to start the regular season. The team they are playing in the New York Giants week one as well. By the way, 3-point spread in that one in favor of Dallas on the road. Darius Slayton gets cut yesterday. Longest tenured player on the team. He is done despite signing that new deal last offseason. But many are saying this is a good omen for what that means for Malik Nabers getting ready to come back from the injury and being available for week one. We got to step aside. More Money Moves after this.
You're watching Money Moves here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
If you're serious about betting, you need to get serious with Edge Boost, the financial platform built specifically for players, a Visa debit card with no usage fees, no more declined deposits, no waiting on bank transfers either. Edge Boost gives you real-time access to your funds 24/7, 365, even nights, weekends, and holidays. And you can use it across all your favorite sports books, prediction markets, DFS platforms, optimized for licensed U.S. gaming, land-based, and online. Earn up to 0.5% cash back on eligible deposits and daily deposit limits up to $5 million per transaction. New users, sign up with the promo code VSIN, make a minimum $100 deposit into your EdgeBoost account, and EdgeBoost will match that deposit up to the $100. It's the smarter way to manage your gaming bankroll. EdgeBoost.io, promo code VSIN. Alongside the giggle monster, Jonathan Von Tobel. Stormy Bonantoni back here with you. And we did, as we were doing all the NFL updates last segment, I forgot to mention Patrick Mahomes. Likely to start week one against the Broncos. Shocking, I know.
Way you did it in the break?
Because I'm done with you, and I'm tired of how you are. Let's welcome in somebody that's actually
nice
to me.
You're not sending me to the cooler.
Someone who's actually nice to me. Adam Burke joins us here on the Progressive Guest Line, managing editor here at VSiN. You can follow him on X at Skating Tripods.
Big Batman fan.
What's up, Adam?
Hey, what's up, guys? Fight nice over there. I can't mediate since I'm not there. So
yeah, we need you in person to help handle this situation to my left. I know we've got plenty of NFL on the brain, but let's talk baseball with you because we do have a full slate of games coming up today and some news about a couple of stars in the league, starting with yesterday. Aaron Judge activated from the injured list. What does this mean for the Yankees moving forward as they are in pursuit of a World Series?
Well, I think it's going to be interesting to see what kind of power production he has when he comes back. You know, this is a guy who was initially supposed to miss 4 to 6 weeks when he went down in late May, early June, and it's now September 8th, and he's just now making his way back. So, you know, the Yankees were at least in a position to kind of wait and, you know, let him get as healthy as humanly possible, because they've gotten really good pitching throughout the course of the season and have gotten enough timely hitting to be 45 and 39 while Judge was out. So, you know, obviously, they're a much better team with Aaron Judge. There's no question about that. He's a guy that is a game changer because of his ability to hit any ball out of the ballpark. But I don't know what the power is going to look like right now. You know, he said that he didn't want a rehab assignment. They acknowledged that request, and he's going to go right back into the major league lineup. So we'll see. I mean, he's got basically 3 weeks now to get ready for the postseason. And that's really all that the Yankees were looking for. That's all that the Yankees needed, was to get him back with some time to get some reps before, you know, entering the month of October. So we'll see. I'm curious to see what the power looks like. I'm curious to see what the contact authority looks like. But obviously, just his presence in the lineup makes it a much more formidable group. And, you know, a guy that opposing pitchers have to really worry about and focus on, that, you know, maybe helps some other guys down the lineup if Judge has a long, prolonged at bat or something like that.
On the other side, in the National League, the other big star, Shohei Ohtani, Adam, we got the news. He is, quote, most likely not going to pitch again this season. So what does that do for the Dodgers, who I think post-trade deadline, a lot of us expected them to be this untouchable force, but in reality, they do look more mortal, I think, than a lot of us expected. What does this mean for the Dodgers' projections?
Yeah, to me, it doesn't really mean much of anything. You know, I mean, they still enter play tonight, 10.5 games ahead in the division, so they'll be able to coast to that. Now, it may impact their ability to get one of the buys, you know, by being one of the top two teams in the National League. But I don't know that they necessarily need that. I think they would like to have that, certainly. You know, anytime you get a little bit of extra downtime, it's a good thing. But they're going to do what they did last year. You know, everyone's just all of a sudden going to miraculously be healthy at the same time. And, you know, they're going to be the team to beat come October. So I don't think it really means that much. I mean, maybe it, you know, has definitely derailed his ability to win the MVP this year, you know, with the season that PCA is having there in Chicago. But look, if they need him for an inning or something like that, you know, come October, he'll probably be able to do it. And if they don't need him, it's because they've spent a ton of money having enough pitching depth that it, you know, it's an embarrassment of riches.
If you want a free $100, you just need $20,000, yeah, and you could throw that on PCA. So we could all go in and split that $100 if you guys would like.
55-1 if you really want to get wild. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that is an expensive price to say the least. Dodgers still, by the way, plus 185 favorites to win it all this year, plus 104 to win the National League. Let's look ahead to today's slate. Adam Burke joining us here, VSiN managing editor, again, at Skating Tripods on X. You're fading your team. Guardians and Orioles going head-to-head. Guards after they lost 2 of 3 last night, 6-4. Tanner Bibee on the hill today for Cleveland against Brandon Young. Home Orioles minus 120 favorites here. Total 8.5. How are you playing it?
Yeah, I'll lay the short price here on Baltimore, the minus 120. So, you know, the thing about the Guardians, if you pay close attention to them, and I obviously pay very close attention to them, they try to set up as many platoon advantages as possible. So they want left-handed batters against right-handed pitchers, and then vice versa. The thought process being, you can combine two cheaper guys into one really good player by having this type of setup. And they also have, you know, a handful of switch hitters in the lineup as well. The problem with that strategy today is that Orioles starter Brandon Young has been much more effective against left-handed batters than he has been against right-handed batters. And the Guardians are not going to deviate from what they normally do. Maybe there's one extra righty in the lineup at most, something like that. But Brandon Young has been very good against lefties. 216 batting average, 301 on base, 375 slugging percentage. Righties are hitting almost 300 off of him, and the Guardians are just not built to be a right-on-right lineup the way that other teams are, and so they're going to put all their lefties out there and hope for the best. And Brandon Young's got a really good splitter. That's his out pitch against lefties. Guardians are bottom five offense against splitters. They don't hit anything off speed well, splitters or changeups. And Tanner Bibee's pitching to more contact this season, and I don't think that that's really worked out in his favor. You know, he's carried a low batting average on balls in play all season, but that's starting to regress now. It's up in the 280s here in the second half after being in the 240s in the first half. He's just not been particularly sharp. Walked 5 last time out. The Guardians just don't have a lot of margin for error with their lineup and with the way that a lot of their relievers have performed. So I don't like this matchup for them tonight, where Brandon Young's probably going to be pretty effective against all their left-handed bats. So I took the Orioles in that minus 120 range here today.
All right, let's go to Rays and Braves. The Freddy Peralta experiment didn't really start off well, but his last two starts have been a little bit better. How does this work for him against Atlanta?
Yeah, and I think that's a really big thing. You know, I mean, it's tough when you get traded at the trade deadline because you've been doing certain things all season long, and you go to a new team, and they want you to do something different. You know, whether it's pitch usage, whether it's maybe changing your arm slot or your positioning on the pitching rubber, whatever the case may be, those teams are acquiring you because they think they can have little tweaks that can make you better and make you more effective. And with Freddy Peralta and a team as analytically savvy as the Tampa Bay Rays, I'm not surprised that it's taken a little bit of time here. But as you mentioned, really good in his last two starts, inducing a lot of swings and misses outside the zone, inducing a lot of swings outside the zone, period, which is going to lead to inducing a lot of weaker contact, a lot of swings and misses in the zone too. So the stuff profile looks really, really good for Freddy Peralta here. And then for the Braves, I mean, look, AJ Smith-Shawver on the mound, that's not a great start for them here today. But this is a Braves team that, you know, they lost an off day on August 31st. They lost another off day on August 20th because they had makeup games to play. They had a 4-city, 7-day road trip because they had to play in Williamsport in the Little League Classic. This is a team that's been grinding for a long time now throughout the month of August. You're coming off of that big series against Philadelphia, the big 4-game series. Didn't have yesterday off, whereas the Rays did. I just think it's a tough spot all around for Atlanta here in this one. So I took the Rays as a short underdog here in the minus 105 range.
Let's go out to Kansas City. Royals and Diamondbacks head-to-head today. Arizona took game one yesterday, 5-4. Weird game, scoreless through nine. All of those runs came in the 10th inning, so a tough push on anybody that had under nine yesterday for sure. But as we look ahead to today, Corbin Burns against Michael Wacha, the Royals, about an even money home dog here. What are you looking at?
Yeah, I'm looking at the Royals here in that home dog role. So as you mentioned, Corbin Burns coming back, first MLB start since June 1st, 2025. Threw a sim game in the Complex League and then went to AAA and threw just two innings. I think he threw 16 pitches. So the thought process here for Arizona tonight is that Corbin Burns is going to be limited to about 60 pitches, and that's going to be it. And that's problematic when you look at their bullpen usage here of late. Multiple guys worked back-to-back days Saturday, Sunday. Brandon Garcia's worked three straight days. A lot of their low-leverage arms pitched yesterday in that game against the Royals. And those are typically guys who aren't used to going back-to-back days because they're guys that you don't want to use unless you kind of have to. So if Arizona is forced to use those guys tonight, here's some uncharted territory for some of them having to pitch back-to-back days. Michael Wacha has been very, very good, very effective again this season for the Royals. Better numbers in the second half than the first half. And also the Royals, the top five offense against right-handed pitching over the last 30 days. So I don't know how sharp Corbin Burns is going to be coming back. I mean, you know, you're going to have some nerves. The cutter is a feel pitch. If he doesn't have a feel for that, he's going to get hit pretty hard. And then Waka's been solid, you know, throughout the course of this season. And I think the Royals have a big rest advantage in terms of the bullpen as well. So I think as a home underdog, they are very much worth a shot here tonight against the D-backs.
I'm sad that you couldn't make it in studio. I really wanted to break down, in all seriousness, Montana State at Nevada. It is a fascinating game, but we will have to save that for another day, my friend.
Thank you, Adam.
Have a good one, guys.
Adam Burke, everybody. VSiN.com managing editor. And worth noting as well, with it officially being week one of the NFL season, Adam and the whole team have a ton of resources out there at VSiN.com. I know he specifically will have an article with some of his NFL plays, his college football plays ahead of week two as well. So VSiN.com/subscribe if you want to learn more or join us on that full-time basis. Get unlimited access to everything that we do here at the network. When we come back, Teaser Tuesday for some shows. It's Total Tuesday for Money Moves. Stick around.
You're watching Money Moves here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
NFL Weekly on the Sharps turns each week's NFL slate into a sports prediction tournament. Everyone starts with the same chips, picks from the same slate, and lands on one public leaderboard so you can see exactly where you stack up. Enter at jointhesharps.com or scan the QR code on the screen, folks. Use the technology provided. Use code VSIN50 for a 50% deposit bonus up to $100. That's jointhesharps.com, promo code VSIN50. 650. Wanted to point out, too, again, for your audience, look at that, okay? You older folks, just pull out your phone, open the camera, and point it at that white square in the bottom right corner of the screen. It's really easy. Jointhesharps.com.
Just like they've been forcing us all to do on menus across the country when you go to a restaurant.
You sound old as hell.
You can do it. I hate it. Do you not hate it?
No, I don't. I think about these things. It's technology. No. Just open your phone. You have it in your hand 24/7. Just scan it and look at it. It's not that hard.
It is the most ridiculous thing.
It's insane. You're insane.
Well, it's not just the menu being on the QR code thing, but it's the places now all over the place that are like, you know what? We don't even want to serve you at all. Why don't you place your entire order in this thing, pay in this thing? Oh, and by the way, you still need to tip us 20%. Hell no.
You don't need to.
Hell no.
We don't have to talk about this. It's part
we
of
We do because no, I'm upset now.
It's part of the program that they use. The tip thing is automatic. For actual service industry folks, you can use it. In other places where it's not, and it's all automated, you don't have to do it. You also have to complain about every single little thing.
Oh.
We live in 2026. It's a digital world. Technology's advanced beyond certain things that humans are being asked to do. That is the reality of the world in which we live in, and I'm sorry.
Did you see the Smashburger thing?
We have
from
a couple statement.
Months ago. Wait, did you? Did you see the Smashburger thing from a couple months ago?
I don't live online.
Where they have the kiosk order station thing, and based on whether or not you tip, it will change your final total.
Well, isn't that how that works?
No. I'm saying if you don't tip, it will make your order more expensive.
Oh, no, I didn't see that.
Yes. Awful. I think that they ended up having to change it because no, it is. They had to make a statement and change it because they were getting all this social media backlash.
Speaking of statements, we have one from the Mac. John Steinbrecher, Mac commissioner, has a statement. After further study and investigation, it is now evident that replay protocol was not properly followed in determining whether time remained on the game clock at the conclusion of the Western Michigan versus Michigan football game. The established replay protocol requires that the game clock displayed on the program feed be used in determining whether time remained. Instead, the Big Ten Conference replay crew relied upon the clock feed embedded within its replay system. As a result, 1 second was placed back on the game clock and an additional play was awarded. This was not a judgment regarding the proper amount of time to place on the clock. It was an error in the application of the established replay protocol governing this specific end-of-game timing situation. Had the protocol been properly followed and the program feed clock been used, no additional play would have been awarded and Western Michigan would have won the game 12-7. As a result, the Mid-American Conference has submitted formal appeals to the NCAA FBS Oversight Committee and the College Football Playoff. The MAC is requesting that those bodies recognize Western Michigan as the actual winner of the game for purposes of their respective rankings, evaluations, and selection deliberations, and take such other corrective action as may be within their authority.
I mean, that's how the AP voters seem to have taken it.
Yeah, for the most part, it seems like it. I was just telling you, Sangren, who does his ratings, has officially put Western Michigan in as 1-0 in his ranking, his power ratings as well. So I think that is clearly the statement that's being made. I was going through some of the, as we were talking about earlier, I was going through some of the individual the ballots just real quick just to see. There's some people that still have Michigan like 20th in the country. Okay. Just stop. I mean, come on. This is why the preseason rankings are so stupid, because you as a voter are tying yourself to preseason rankings that are clear projection. You have no clue what's going on. And so you feel like just because they won the game that to stay inside of the top 25, you can fall even though you win. And we know that what happened was controversial.
And that's why we talk about power ratings and AP poll rankings being completely very, very different things. But this is really interesting, especially after the MAC initially came out with an accepting tone of what the Big Ten had given as their explanation. So a big change here. They woke up this morning and chose violence, and I am here for it. We'll talk more college football a little bit later on in the show. Let's cruise through here. Second half of this segment, getting into a handful of totals on the move in the National Football League. Other shows do Teaser Tuesday. We're going to be doing Total Tuesday moving forward.
Play
not today.
Okay.
We're going to build it up. But let's start with the Browns and Jags, seeing a little bit of under money come through here. 39.5 up to 40.5. The Jags offense got hot at the end of the last year. They certainly want to pick up where they left off. But this is a Browns defense that, even without Myles Garrett, projects to be pretty good here. How do you see it?
Well, that's what I was curious about with this one specifically. We've seen it tick up, but you can make the case that this is going to be a relatively low scoring game, especially if there's somebody like you, right? You kind of buy into Jacksonville, especially I think from a defensive standpoint. I'm not really putting too many words in your mouth, and they were one of the more efficient defenses last year. So if you're also somebody like this is a meeting of two things that I think you would be totally in on here and been playing this game under. just because you hate Deshaun Watson, you hate Todd Monken, you think he's a moron, you think that this offense has absolutely no redeeming qualities whatsoever, and that Jacksonville is the best thing since sliced bread, especially on defense. But on the flip side, I think at the very least, despite your Browns hate, you respect enough of the defensive personnel that we know that this is going to be an above average group. And we're talking about first game, working out some jitters, new offensive system for the Browns, things of that nature where I can foresee a slow-paced, ugly, low-scoring type of game in which Jacksonville wins in a lopsided affair and yet still keeps the game under the total. What I'd be curious about is whether or not this would get to one of those numbers that's worth playing under, like a 41 or something like that.
Yeah, the initial lean was under. I don't like all of the words that you were trying to put in my mouth there, but a lot of the sentiment is correct. I will also say unders 13-6 when Deshaun Watson starts games for the Browns at kickoff. It will be 693 days since he last started a game. However, something I did not know until this morning that I didn't love, and something maybe we'll have tomorrow on the show when we do some of those trends that I know you love so much. Deshaun Watson, 30-35 against all teams not named the Jaguars, 7-0 against the Jags. And yes, the bulk of that did come while he was a member of the Houston Texans. However, even a couple years ago, if you remember when the Browns started the season 1-6 with Deshaun Watson opening up the season, their one win in Jacksonville.
Yeah.
Bucks and Bengals here down from 52.5 to 50.5, even with the move to the under, still the highest total on the board for week one. Last season, the only game with the total in the 50s week one was Ravens-Bills, and that was a crazy, chaotic shootout, 41-40 final score there, defense optional. Do we get more of the same?
Well, so this is one, too, where, and you'll see kind of a theme with some of these floating around key numbers for these totals, right? 51 since 2004, we have fallen on this point total in NFL games about 3.75% of all contest. So it's a pretty free, it's a pretty key number to be sitting right underneath that 51 at 50.5. But I'm curious, and maybe the market is thinking this, with these defensive improvements on paper that the Cincinnati Bengals have made, is this going to be a team that we're going to get initially at the beginning of the year, some of these types of totals, maybe in the 50s, and the market's not accounting enough for some of the improvements that they have made, and thus there is some value in playing these games under the total. So I don't know if we'll get back up to that 51, 51.5, but if you do, I think it's worth potentially playing on underneath that total, Stormy, just because of the potential that the Bengals are a much more improved defensive team and that these games aren't going to devolve into some of these high volatility shootouts that we have come to expect for Cincinnati.
I think from a market standpoint, there's just still a lot of unknowns when it comes to the Bengals defense, to your point. And also Baker Mayfield on the other side, who's probably going to have his hair on fire after not getting the contract that he wanted. What could they be capable of offensively? How about the Bears and Panthers up from 45.5 to 47.5 this game in Carolina? Overs 7-2 in Bears road games last season. Ben Johnson said he wants to have a historically high scoring offense. Do you think that starts in Carolina?
Yeah, this one I think is going to be pretty. This one too is really all about your team, the Carolina Panthers. I think the Bears are going to stink to high heaven on defense. I think there's a lot of indicators that that's going to be the case. They're not going to be able to force as many turnovers, one would assume, because that just doesn't generally translate from year to year. So if they're going to be giving up everything up and down the field, but Carolina, are they good enough to take advantage of that? I kind of trust that Chicago is going to be a really good defensive team. And you're still kind of in that dead space, right? Like 45 to 47, not the biggest deal in the world, 47. So I think that you could still make a case if it dips a little bit lower. Like if there's some buyback, you can play this over like 46.5. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I'd be curious to see. This is all I think about whether or not your team's going to hold up their end of the bargain.
Well, I'm really curious, specifically knowing how good that the Bears were running the football last year, if the Panthers run defense is fixed with the additions they made, right? Like they bring in Jalen Phillips, they bring in Devin Lloyd, supposed to make this a better run-stopping unit after they had the worst run block win rate defensively in the league last year. Mm-hmm. Will that turn around? Will that get fixed? I think that'll be a key for that game coming up. Let's hit one more last 90 seconds. Jets at Titans up from 38.5 to 39.5, two of the worst offenses in the NFL last year, taking over money.
Yes, I mean, I think I can kind of get it, and I think the Jets are going to be a little bit better on offense than we give them credit for, and we'll see exactly what Tennessee is on offense too. But I mean, man, 39.5. I feel like you could play this under. We'll see how high this gets because, you know, 37 is a little bit more key, but I think I would play under here. I'm surprised. We'll see how high it climbs, but I would expect this one gets some buyback at some point. And I just wanted to point this one out too. Jets are going to be a really solid teaser leg, I think, for week one. So if you want to pair that up with anything else.
The Titans angle of this, I know we had some high thoughts about Cam Ward and everything, especially the last five games of the season, the way that he was able to, I think, come into his own a lot more. And then you see the preseason and the offense really looking disjointed, 0-for-5, trying to connect with Carnell Tate, who they bring in to help wake up that offense a little bit. So I certainly have my concerns for Tennessee and the Jets offense once again here. Again, total 39.5 on that one. We're going to step aside, kicking off hour two next. Back talking college football, top 25 games and line moves you need to know when we return.